So we've got the sort of news-based pamphlet and a more theory-driven thing. And I guess another way I can explain what we do is to talk about how our local group organises. So we have meetings on a weekly basis, and we talk about members' issues, the problems we have in our workplace and things like that, how to resist sort of bosses doing things like cutting pay, victimising workers, how to organise in the workplace and that kind of thing. We also talk about the various campaigns we're organised in. So we've got a mutual aid union at the moment called MASH. There's a pamphlet and there's a stall downstairs about that. And it's basically to deal with community struggles and people's problems in the workplace. We have a sort of solidarity union, so if someone wasn't being paid properly at work, the group would go with them to the workplace and sort of use direct action tactics to try and deal with those problems. We also involved in an anarchist feminist group, because a lot of people have interest in feminism within the group, and there's a few other projects going on, but I'll hand over to the software guy and then we can come back for questions later.
I'll just do a sort of similar thing, give a brief rundown of what we're about and then try and keep it brief. SOLFED's an anarcho-syndicalist organisation. People who are aware of anarchism, if people have heard of the CNT, that's our famous sort of Spanish sister section. But that's as much a burden as an asset, because it's a lot to live up to. So similar to AFM, we've got to bring out a regular paper, got magazine, all that kind of stuff. One thing we've really been trying to do over the past sort of 18 months or so is kind of try and put a lot of this stuff into action, because there's a lot of these, you know, a lot of people come to anarchism through these ideas. It sounds really great, but we're actually trying to, you know, implement this stuff. So we've developed a workplace organiser training program to give people the skills to organise in their workplace on a direct action basis, and that's open to anyone who's interested in organising. You don't have to be a member. Obviously, if people want to get involved, that's brilliant. But we're trying to just train people up, get people organising, and support them. We've also started trying to do, actually, this might be something interesting to discuss about similar to this MASH thing, but we're doing that through SOLFED. I've come up from Brighton for this, but we've had cases where, like, a waiter who hadn't been paid his wages. One of our members was teaching English, and he mentioned that he hadn't been paid, so we put him in touch. And we, you know, did a picket and things like that to try and get his wages paid. And we've recently been involved in a campaign against the Office Angels agency. A worker who worked for 3 days was only paid for 1 day, and then when he sought advice on it on the internet, they found out and started harassing him for trying to get advice. So we organised a campaign around that, started pickets of the local branch, and then when they didn't respond, it spread out. And then during a National Week of Action, they caved in and paid him the money. Because initially they were trying to impose conditions on it, like he'd have to appear in court to testify and all this kind of stuff. So we stuck that out, and we were supported in that by AFED groups and IWW groups as well. So it was quite, although there are separate organisations, I think there is quite a relationship. Mutual aid is one of the sort of central ideas to anarchism, and I think we've been putting that into practice quite a lot. In terms of where, I guess what we're trying to achieve more is, we are trying to shift more into that kind of activity, making anarchism a really practical thing, but a really useful thing for us in our own lives at work and what have you, friend problems with landlords, but also becoming, you know, something you'll get your friends involved. If you know someone's getting messed about, but we become, you know, people come to the anarchist to help sort the problem out, because otherwise anarchism is just this thing that shows up on the telly every now and then when there's some trouble in London, you know. And I think really what it's about is about everyday mutual aid and solidarity and putting that into action. So that's more where we're trying to go with the training and stuff like that. But I guess I'll just leave it at that, and then we can...
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so maybe initially, if we just have any questions that are related to what the two speakers have just said, anything you're a bit unclear about or want to follow up or ask, you know, direct responses to, and then we'll open it for bigger questions about anarchism and libertarian communism.
Me?
Yeah.
Well, thinking, this is an intro to anarchism, is it, sort of thing? Yeah. Okay, because, you know, because there has been a focus on it. So both of you see focus on workplace stuff, and that's what you've been talking about. But also there is, you know, I've read about Solfed talk about community unions and AFED are narco-communists, which means that, you know, there's a focus on communities that are not just workplace communities, but localities, or maybe even, you know, be a set of football fans or people you go clubbing with. Do you know what I mean? So there's different places and spaces to organise. Do you think that's fair? Do you think that's a good way of thinking about, like, community and working together and stuff?
Yeah, definitely so. And it's something about highlighting differences again. I think that's where the AFED and Solfed differ slightly, is that I think Federation tends to be more community orientated and Solfed tends to be more workplace orientated, as though we operate in the unions and Solfed obviously operate in the community as well. But that is a point of distinction, I guess, in some ways. At the AFED, a lot of members live up in Walkley, so they all get involved in local stuff up there, resisting sort of multinational coming into an area. Like they wanted to build a Tesco up there. The local community didn't want Tesco to be there, so the AFED got involved in organising to stop that. And that's the kind of thing we do as well, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think we really agree. It's something Solfed's been weak on as an organisation, that we've been involved in things, but we haven't really had a proper strategy for that. So that's something we're doing at the moment, is we've just put up a document on the website, and we're developing a strategy about how to actually, because we've got one for work, and that gives people this impression that we are emphasising on work, which has been the case. And I think partly that's just a tactical thing, quite a small organisation, and it's quite relatively easy to organise around workplace issues because the boss is always giving you shit, and there's always a spark to start from. Whereas community stuff tends to come and go. You know, sometimes you'll get big stuff like privatisation of local playing fields and things like that, and you can get stuck into campaigns like that. But we haven't really had the resources to sort of have a sustained community organising, like going door knocking and building up stuff. But I mean, maybe that's where this MASH stuff is quite interesting, because the stuff that I think they're trying to do in Sheffield with MASH is quite similar to the kind of things we've been trying to do, which is also looking at issues like landlords and things like that. So it's trying to organise on class issues, but wherever they come up, not just at work.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I'm a copy bastard. I told you downstairs that, like, I will just, I'll keep chipping in until other people interrupt us. But
until I ask you to
stop in some way. But I mean, the other things that, you know, in terms of introduction, there are, you know, maybe other aspects that you know, a lot of people hear about, see about. You know, you see, for instance, the Black Bloc tactics, which are not exclusively anarchist, but, you know, people dressing in black and doing property damage and stuff like that. And the environmental movement has been, like, you know, climate camp and things like that. They're quite, and no borders, and these groups are, like, sort of anarchist inspired and stuff like that. I mean, what do you think or feel about those sort of things, you know, because that's a lot of way for people to get involved in, sort of freely associating, just choosing to get involved in something they care about and making a day-to-day difference and taking action on it. I mean, you know, is that kind of stuff that...
Yeah, again, you make a good point that the Anarchist Federation get involved in things like March the 26th, we went down. A lot of people were on the Black Bloc, some members weren't, because they weren't comfortable with that tactic. And that's not something the AFED particularly has a position on in those kind of situations. I think it's more up to individual members. But anti-fascist work is another example of something that we get involved in, but there's not a sort of really solid line on that, on those kind of issues. Yeah, I don't know.
I think the sort of stuff you point to, I think there's a lot. I think the movement, I mean, we're obviously both coming from organised anarchist organisations, whereas the movement is always bigger than any organisation. There's a lot of stuff like, say, ecological direct action, things like that, which is inspired in various ways by anarchism, the way it's both organised and its ideology and stuff like that. And I think that's healthy to have. Movements are always going to be bigger than any given organisation. I think in terms of how we get involved in them, it's a case of, I can't speak for AFED, but certainly with us, it has been pretty much a case-by-case thing rather than any kind of, partly a weakness that there hasn't been whereas with the workplace, we've got quite a clear idea of what we're trying to do with the community and these kind of ecological struggles. when something comes along locally, we'll get involved in it, but we're making it up as we go along. And maybe that's the best way to do it, because a lot of the time these things are quite unique and you have to do an approach. But there is a much broader spectrum of anarchism than what we would necessarily represent. But I think, generally speaking, there's a relationship of sort of mutual aid and solidarity when these things happen, that groups support each other. I mean, after the Black Bloc, for example, you know, we wrote, I'm from Brighton, Salford, and we wrote a letter to UK NCUT, an open letter, because the media were going really hard in on trying to get them to divide and rule, condemn the, you know, blame the arrests of the 148 that them that were arrested, blame that on the Black Bloc. And we wrote this letter saying, well, look, this is divide and rule. And as a result of that, we then got invited to the local UK NCUT meetings, and we've done some joint stuff. And I know that's happened in Liverpool as well, where some UK NCUT members turned out to support a picket that Salford organised. And so, you know, I think that's, at its best, that's one of the defining features of anarchism compared to sort of other sort of left-wing ideologies, that mutual aid is kind of foregrounded, that although people are often in groups, you know, I think it's important to be organised. But it's not a case of rival organisations sort of elbowing each other out of the way and saying we're the true organisation. You know, there's always a relationship. People want to do something, people support each other almost always, pretty much.
Yeah, and that brings in a very good point about anarchist theory in general, is that even though we're in organisations, we don't want those organisations to rule movements. It's a place to organise and discuss and work together, but it's not about taking the lead and saying, like, we're going to do this, everyone follow us. We take the lead from movements and see what people want to do to deal with various issues, and we give ideas, but it's about a dialogue between and within the organisation and between other groups as well. The Salford workplace strategy training, some AFED members had a Salford guy come up and do provide that training, because if there's experience there, it's worth using it rather than sort of making barriers between the organisations all the time. I mean, you're from the IWW, aren't you?
I am indeed, yeah.
I don't know, what would you say was your position on those kind of movements?
I've had personal experience. I was sort of, you know, my introduction to anarchism was back in the beginning of the noughties, whatever it's called, which is, you know, the anti-globalisation and anti-corporate movements. You sort of often you get involved with things on a single issue basis where you go, oh well, that's crap and that's crap. Oh yeah, there's a pattern here. It's like, you know, all of the, you know, every corporation is crap. That's the reason for that is capitalism. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, global, you know, things like the IMF and the World Bank, they're wank because they you know, because they're part of a, you know, structure of oppression, you know. And it's not the only structure of oppression you're opposed to. You know, you're against sexism and you're against racism. And you start, you know, and immediately the first thing you come into contact with is a paper seller from a socialist party or something like that telling you, you know, that they have the only answer. And as long as you do exactly what they say, then you're going to change the world and make it a better place. And it never sat right with me, but it took a while before I found, you know, the people that I was doing stuff with on a day-to-day basis, you know, that like took action and helped win campaigns, were doing things where you just joined in, no pressure, just, you know, get involved, do something, whatever you feels right. It turned out they were anarchists. And so that was like my experience. And, you know, then in GA 2005 and Climate Camp and No Borders and Bits and Bobs and the anti-fascist movement as well. And the IWW's been the past year and a half or so, because even prior to the cuts, I started to realise that, you know, direct action stuff tends to be, you need to sometimes need a commitment that not everyone has, you know, like, you know, why would, you know, people aren't, or I have absolutely no problems with the Black Bloc whatsoever and quite happily support property damage if it achieves a goal, then, you know, fair enough. But that's not for everyone. In fact, it's for a very, very tiny minority of people, and it always will be. Mm-hmm. And so it's direct action, as it's described, for environmental direct action or whatever. You know, for me, what I realised about the IWW is it's not laden ideologically. You get involved and you say, we're going to help you with your day-to-day bread and butter issues. That, you know, look, you know, and it's for everyone. You know, it's for, you know, if you're unemployed, if you're a student, if you're a pensioner, whatever, you know, get involved, and it's £1 a month, and you know, we can even knock that on the head if you're really poor, and you know, we're just there really, we don't really care, just to help each other out, share experience, make every person as strong as you can, both collectively and individually, to sort of resist the horrible crap that goes on. And I think, you know, but what I love about anarchism is it doesn't matter how many different organisations or streams there are of it, which I've become more and more aware of more streams, is that they're not competitive. We're not trying to say we've got the answer. It's just your kind of preference on the way that you like working and the way that you want to do things to try and make the world a better place. And that's got to be a massive positive. So I like that. I really do.
Okay, other people? Any other kind of views or takes on it, or any kind of problems that you feel like, well, you know, I'm sympathetic to, you know, this and that about anarchism, but I do really have a sticking point with some particular problem.
I want to ask something.
Mm-hmm.
How does the anarchist movement regard direct democracy, and is this something that the anarchist movement actually supports?
Is that direct democracy, did you say?
Yeah.
What exactly is it?
Referendum for a lot of issues, and presenting new laws by referendum for voting.
Well,
are you not familiar with the term?
Yeah. Some people use direct democracy to mean not voting and things like that.
Oh.
It's consensus decision making and things like that. But in terms of voting, the Anarchist Federation ran a campaign during the general election last year telling people not to vote and explaining why, because the whole system is sort of messed up, so there's no point in getting involved with it. So voting for one sort of boss who's going to oppress you over another, they would say was not where your sort of priorities should be taken. And that's the position of the AFED.
What about like if they say like a direct democracy, and say like you have a choice on a specific issue rather than being a choice on a representative?
As in, because he was talking about representative
democracy in which we elect leaders for the legislative, for example, and for the executive, and there is direct democracy in which you pretty much act as the legislative in the sense that you can propose new laws and get them voted on by referendum, and you can also vote for laws that are proposed. That's the idea.
So you're using it in the sense of like as a decision-making process, as a collective decision-making process.
Yeah,
collectively you choose what rules you want and how they're implemented.
Yeah, by the sound of it, it sounds as if you aren't aware of direct democracy as it's used in this sense.
I think it's probably worth distinguishing between the sort of trying to democratise the system we have at the moment. Like, for example, if we get referendums on a law that's coming in or AV referendums and things like that. And the kind of society we're trying to create. And I think in terms of the current system, I don't think even democratising it changes it. I think the fundamental nature of capitalist society is one where it's ruled by wealth and the wealthy, and even if you have democratised that, it'll be circumvented. So people fought very hard for the vote to get a representative system. When they got it, people realised that actually it doesn't even make all that much difference when you get your party in, and they just do the opposite of what they said they were going to do. But in terms of kind of the way I would understand direct democracy is how we organise ourselves. Like within, and I'm sure this goes for AFED, within our organisations we use a direct democratic structure. In Salford's case, everyone's a member of a local group. Local group, everyone has an equal say. And then each local group has an equal say in the federation. And anyone who has a position, I'm one of the people who produced the newspaper, when we're given a specific mandate and delegated to do that for a fixed period of time. And the mandate specifies what we have the power to do and what we don't, and what we need to go and ask about.
Mm.
And there's very clear limits to the power that we're given then. So if we just went off and did things that we weren't authorised to do, we'd then get recalled and immediately replaced. So that's using direct democracy to organise within our organisation. And also it's something to push for when we're involved in wider movements. Like I'm at Sussex University at the moment. I've gone back to university. And there's been a lot of occupations and things like that. So in terms of the way we try and run the occupations, we'll advocate for those kind of methods. So I think that's the way I see it, is the way you organise against the society we're in. Of course, what the goal of that would be to create a completely different kind of society based on those principles. But I don't think if you're talking about like the current sort of setup but more democratic, I think we'd oppose that, but we'd oppose to it a meaningfully democratic society that's created by people taking power for themselves. So that makes sense.
Can I just ask, what's the link between anarchism and communism, and is the only viable model for anarchism related to communism?
Yeah, well, the AFED is an anarchist-communist organisation. They want a stateless, classless society, but run on communist grounds, so people working together and using mutual aid and other communist principles. Sort of in terms of what Marx might have said, the sort of end state after you erect this state and it ends up being accepted by people. That's sort of in a nutshell.
Yeah, we have the same ends.
Is there other people offering alternatives to that sort of thing? I mean, is there a different contrary argument?
Most.
You mean anarchism without communism?
Yeah, I'm just saying. Everyone here seems to be communist based. I'm just wondering what they're.
Historically, there were three sort of main tendencies in anarchism. There was the sort of individualist stroke, mutualist one, which was was kind of like a market-based society of cooperatives and collectives and what have you, trading amongst them, but with no hierarchies of workers. You had a sort of collectivist system, which was a sort of hybrid between that and communism, where certain goods were provided based on needs and what have you, but you retained some kind of exchange. And then there was the communist variant. I think over time, I'm not aware of any organised presence for those other two tendencies. So I think anarchist communism or libertarian communism has become probably the predominant tendency. I'm sure there are other people around, but I'm not aware of any organised presence for those since sort of 70 years ago or something.
Okay, one and then two. I was going to ask in terms of a lot of the more direct action demonstrations and things like that, due to things like FIT or information gathering, it's become quite necessary to do things not necessarily black blocking, but the face covering, etc., etc. How do both groups feel about being more public or offering sort of a face or someone to talk to that to the more regular community or in their workplaces? Like, how do they could do that better rather than to, so that there's a face or something to talk to rather than just what people have read or, because to the people that don't look into things or whatever.
Well, within the Anarchist Federation, people, all the members sort of organise in their workplaces, and usually when you're doing that, you're not wearing a mask, so you do have a public face on that front. And a lot of members of the AFED aren't comfortable with black bloc tactics at all. They don't like getting involved in them, whether it's because of violence, if that's necessary or not, or because they just don't feel physically capable. And they obviously sort of prioritise the more public face of things and organising in the workplace. Does that answer the question?
I was thinking about more how can this sort of be out there more, because I know that a lot of the time I've heard from Tristan that they get contact from the media quite a lot asking for statements, things like that, but generally don't feel comfortable getting a collective response that goes back and forward. So how is the best way to the general public, so not just people that actually know you because you work with them, but
yeah, dealing with the media, that also becomes a difficult issue. And the AFED have issued sort of statements to the press before. In certain circumstances, it's quite hard to get a unified statement at short notice in a sort of democratic way, because you have to come together. Yeah. So that causes problems. And the other thing that a lot of people feel very uncomfortable with is the press tend to manipulate your views. Mm-hmm. When I have given interviews before, sometimes it's just complete fabrication what they end up printing, and very rarely will they say that you can have editorial rights over it before it gets published, things like that. Mm-hmm. It does cause problems, but I agree with you that I think there's a lot of misrepresentation about anarchism, and that's something that we could probably do with having a more sort of constructive message out there about it, but it's hard when so much of the media does misrepresent things and distort things.
Mm.
And that's why we publish our own sort of news sheets and things like that. But there's also, unfortunately, a problem where there's only so many of us. We're quite small groups, and it's hard to sort of get the message out there when you're competing against like multinational news corporations and things.
Yeah, just basically covered it, but a couple of quick things. Yeah, on those, I mean, those kind of big demos, although they grab all the media headlines, they're probably quite a really, really small part of the kind of stuff we're involved in, I think. It's obviously one of the most visible parts, but it's visible in inverse proportion to its importance, in a way. But I know that, you know, there were Salford people there or thereabouts, both on the demo and in and around the Black Bloc. But people were making a big effort to give out papers and I think AFEDs were giving out, they had like a fold-out poster thing. And having those conversations, because, I mean, I was sort of on the fringe of the Black Bloc at one point and was just giving out things. And people were stopping and asking what it's about and was explaining, you know, I would say, oh, why are they wearing all that? And I was like, well, see those coppers? And, you know, having those kind of conversations, even in a situation that wasn't really a riot, actually, you know, but even in a situation like that, you can be outward looking and talk to people. And on the media thing, yeah, I mean, generally it is difficult to agree a democratic statement quickly, and the press wants stuff turned around very fast. Mm-hmm. They're used to dealing with press spokesmen who can just say what they want on behalf. And obviously we're wary of being misrepresented, but we have got some sympathetic stuff in some of the papers, like around the March 26th, Independent run us a feature which had a Salford member in there who posed for a photo with a big flag and pretty much put in what he just told them, pretty much, for, you know. So there's something we're looking into is, can we find out who those sympathetic journalists are and then feed them stories rather than necessarily just answering questions if anyone gets in touch?
Are you comfortable using like your real names for that, or was it like anarchists? Or
the guy who did it was okay with it, but a lot of people, obviously, if you're at work, you don't necessarily want your boss knowing, especially if you're trying to organise, you don't necessarily want your face splashed in the papers. A guy from Brighton is currently suspended from his job because of the letter we wrote to UK and Cut. Daily Mail and the Telegraph went after him. And complete bullshit story, smeared him as the ringleader of the violence, and because he works for local government, they had to be seen to do something because the Telegraph was calling for blood. So he's been suspended for sort of 6 weeks or something while they investigate. There's nothing to investigate, and he'll get his job back almost certainly, or be organising a campaign if he doesn't. But you know, there are consequences, so people generally will try and keep their name out of the press.
Okay, one and then two.
Mine was just a comment about the individualist organisations. If somebody was militantly individualist, they couldn't have an organisation.
That's a good point. I was just in regards to the comments about talking to the media and things. I think, from my perspective, you know, the large multinational, massively rich media corporations are not. I don't think it's possible for us to use those to our advantage in any kind of truly successful way, simply because they're always going to be opposed to our politics because of their nature as a profit-making organisation. I think if there are sympathetic journalists that you can get the odd good story in with, fantastic. But I think in some respects, as you pointed out, you know, you've made statements that have been horribly misrepresented. It's actually worse than us almost saying nothing to them, because at least if we kind of go no comment, we can't have words put into our mouths. The media is going to do its best to demonise us anyway. I think alternate forms of like media sort of producing our own newspapers, doing things online, and almost word of mouth is very, very quite powerful, actually, and challenging, you know, the people's assumption that the media is completely correct.
Yeah, I mean, just picking up on that, I think the best propaganda is action, and this is an old anarchist idea, you know, the ideas are quite abstract, you know, just sitting around talking about freedom and lack of hierarchy doesn't really mean anything, whereas you see it in action, it's almost like common sense that how else would you organise? Why would you make someone in charge, you know? And so things like, yeah, this Office Angels campaign, we're hoping to do more things like this, rack up some victories, and then you can put it in a local newsletter and say, this person had this problem, I'm sure MASH would be doing similar stuff. This person, their landlord, stole their deposit. We did X, Y, and Z. Together we want it back. If you have a problem, get in touch. And then you can go directly to people. Obviously, limited numbers, and you can only produce a few thousand of a local newsletter, or whatever. But if over time you can build up that reputation, that people know what you're about, and And that word of mouth reputation is strong, but then when the media's me, people will be like, well, hang on a minute, they helped me out. And so I think that's it's a bit more of a patient, long-term approach, but I think that's the way you can't directly compete with the mass media, because their budget and their circulation is way above anything we're going to be capable of.
Okay, one and then two.
I just wanted to say I think it's perhaps sometimes a mistake to make a principle out of not speaking to the mainstream media. I don't think either of you have done that. But for instance, do you remember the story around the undercover cop Mark Kennedy was exposed some time ago? There was a bit of a shutdown around that, and people wouldn't speak to the mainstream media, and nothing very much came out until it was the mainstream media who got stuff out. In fact, The Guardian exposed Marco in Bristol and Lynn in Leeds, and despite everything, people kind of in our movement, if you like, were doing mistakenly, I think, in that respect. And just on individualist anarchists, if you like, anarchists without a class struggle orientation, I think you do meet a lot of them, perhaps not in organisations, but certainly in like the climate camp movement and things. You know, fluffy anarchists who are involved in single issue campaigns, perhaps, who do identify themselves as anarchists, but don't have an orientation towards class struggle and defeating capitalism and organising in working class communities and workplaces and things.
I think that we all can agree that there's misconceptions about anarchism in people's minds. And I think that it's also our problem for not separating ourselves from other tendencies like the black bloc tactics or others. For example, we have to say that anarchism isn't a couple hundred years just breaking windows. Anarchism is mass militant action of the working class itself. So that I think that we have to make this distinction in people's minds if we want to overcome these misconceptions of anarchism being a petty bourgeois tendency. It's also our own fault for creating these misconceptions.
Okay, that's quite a controversial point. Does anyone want to respond to that? That's quite controversial. You're saying let's highlight the differences and distinguish ourselves and separate ourselves off, where another viewpoint would be let's actually not have good anarchists and bad anarchists.
But from class struggle anarchists and nihilists, for example, what I'm talking.
I'd just like to say that there is true that they not necessarily need to provide into a movement of good and bad anarchists, but you definitely need to just really show that the synonym in the media of it being chaos is very much it's like anarchy's always men. It's always men, like chaos and without government. They're two separate things. And so when the media puts it together, that does need to be made clear, and sort of people need to be made aware that it's got this duality. So use it, tactfully, I guess.
I guess the thing is to, if you can do that politically, to draw a distinction without, basically, the danger is you don't want to end up lining up with the witch hunts against black bloc members and things like that, or members in inverted commas, participants is probably a better word, because I think, I don't think either Solfed or AFED has a position. I think people disagree. I know some people feel quite strongly hostile to black bloc tactics, others more sympathetic. But I think that's a tactical argument and a political argument. But it the danger is when people are potentially facing long jail terms, we don't want to be lining up. We want that to be understood as a tactical argument rather than putting the boot into them when they're down, kind of thing. So I think I can see what you're saying. It's important to say, well, there's a whole constructive side about community organising, but the invisible stuff that goes on every day in your workplace and in your neighbourhood and what have you, that is, again, unless you turn up with a red and black flag, no one even knows that's anarchism. And it's probably important to emphasise that it's not just all about going out and breaking windows. In fact, that's not really much to do with anything. But to do that in such a way that I don't know, it's a very difficult line to tread when there's a lot of repression and there's probably people going to serve time over what happened in London. And we don't want to be, even if we disagree with the tactics, we don't want to be lining up with the state against them. So yeah. It's a tricky one.
Okay, Okay, I'm just prioritising people who haven't spoken first, so first you.
Yeah, I mean, that was like the distinction between... I think the main thing is people who are engaging in those actions because they think that something good will come out of it, and then people who are engaging in those actions simply for fun. Because that was something which became quite clear to me on March of 26, was I met up with a couple of friends at Piccadilly Circus quite late in the evening, and at that point it was literally just people fighting the police, and the only chant was going around was "No justice, no peace, fuck the police." And whilst I agree with that, like, all it shows to the people is essentially that it's just these people who are fighting what they see as the force of law and order. Like, it wasn't anything, it wasn't like Oxford Street where you're trying to shut down a big business, it wasn't like you're saying we don't want these cuts, it was just people going around setting stuff on fire, which all the green activists obviously got quite pissy about. It was all rubbish, it was quite funny, but and yeah, just people standing there, and there were people like just talking about how we need to go and fight the police, and it's like, well, why? And it's like, oh, for the hell of it. And that's the kind of thing which I think can give the tactics a bad light. It's more the way that you need to give yourself a decent target, I think. The thing about Milbank, for example, was that it was the Tory headquarters, so that sent a very strong statement about what they thought. The thing about Oxford Street was that it was all of the tax-dodging businesses. Again, it sent a strong thought about that. If you're just standing anywhere you can, launching a brick at a policeman, nobody is really going to get behind that in the general public. I think that's kind of the thing which we need to distinguish between, especially because there were some newspapers saying that even just like football hooligans were coming down like just to riot, and I'm not sure how true that was, but I reckon probably quite a few of them were there, and that they were just there for a ruckus. And I think we should try and kind of just distinguish ourselves from those actions. Not write it off completely, as I say, I think that fucking the police is, well, not nice, but a good thing. But yeah, we need to like make our actions more clear.
Okay, 1, 2, 3.
Okay. I think the main problem with the media portrayal of things like the Black Bloc is that it takes what is pretty much a kind of a small tactic in terms of direct action and protest, and almost turns that into... It portrays it as that's the end result of what we want. That's what anarchists want, is to run around wearing masks, smashing things up. It's not... This is what anarchists are doing to get their eventual aims. It's... That is, like, almost the root desire, which is that... I think that's what we need to fight. Not so much go, well, this is a bad tactic, or this is a good tactic, or these people are idiots, or these people are martyrs, or whatever. We just need to make a distinction between... the fact that it's a tactic and what we actually want out of anarchism, which is, you know, stateless society and with equality and all those kind of things. So I think if we're going to try and challenge the portrayal, that's the direction we need to go in, not maybe taking an organised stance on whether it's good or bad.
I know it's quite an obvious point, but as people have said about it being a tactic, I think it's very basic, very difficult to say that you want to distinguish from different people, because in fact a lot of the people that are doing the stuff that you would maybe agree with more are the same people that are doing the other tactics as well. So you can't. It's not such a clear-cut distinction to make to distance yourself. So even if people in here agree that you should, that they want to put themselves away from the tactic, I don't think that's the same thing as distancing yourself from the people that are involved in them, because they're probably doing a lot of other things beside that.
Yeah.
Thanks. One
of them
two.
Yeah, Martin Luther King said the riot is the poor man's vote, yeah. And I just think it's a really, really, really dangerous thing to even be considering distancing yourselves from Black Bloc tactics, yeah, or rioters, or saying, oh, well, they're football hooligans, they're thugs. You know, some of them are anarchists and some of them weren't. Some of them were kids who were, like, you know, fighting the police, and why the fuck not? I mean, literally, what else do you have? As a 15-year-old kid from South London, whose education, your EMA has been taken away, you're not going to get a degree. They said it before. They said, you know, we're going to have to deal drugs to have a living. So, you know, if your life is meaningless and there is no representation, there's no hope for anything better, then why, you know, who the hell are we? You know, what elitists are we to be sitting on the sideline judging anyone? And in fact, we should be actively getting involved, because, you know, propaganda of the deed is something we believe in, and I'm going to be damned if I'm going to be walking from A to B to make my fucking point. I tell you now, like, I'm not going to do it. I was part of Stop the War, and it was the most pointless waste of time that's been known in the history of man. So forget about that. And in terms of communication, Climate Camp is something to learn from all its flaws. It had a set up media team with clear guidelines, and it was able to get out and manipulate and use media messaging. Now, you can't always do it well, but as Chomsky said, you know, there's cracks in the system. There's always cracks to exploit. There are cracks in the media system. We can use them a little bit. Let's not make that the emphasis, but let's, like, have a crack at that. And let's also be very, very clear of what we're doing in our own town centres, be there all the time. And I'll be organising training on that in Manchester, if anyone's interested.
Okay. One, and then two, three, four, and then five.
Yeah. I think the strength that anarchism is beginning to show over sort of like established Marxist groups is that we are one big but divergent movement with many, many tactics and strategies, and I think that's a self, that's a strength. On the black bloc, I think we have to remind ourselves that we have to be very, very careful about letting the press set our agenda. We never let the press set our agenda. Black bloc has been a tactic that's been devised for many, many reasons, and I think on 26th of March it was successful. For one, because it established and showed that it can be possible to establish, in a very, very brief period, albeit, liberated zones in the middle of London where our ideas elsewhere, the forces of the state were minimised, we run rings round them, forced them to retreat, outmanoeuvred them, and ultimately defeated them. On the same day, however, there were different tactics, the camp in Hyde Park, the squat in Mayfair, which showed the same thing but using different tactics. So I think, to be honest, all these tactics flow into each other, and we have to be very, very cautious about saying this is the right way or this is the right way. Different tactics come into their own at different times and also for different people. We don't let the press set our agenda, we set our own agenda. And of course we have to try and influence the press, and I think one of the things is that we have to try and get out there, whether it's by our own media, and yes, at times use it, capitalist media or local media when we can, is that anarchism is more than just about breaking windows. And when we do break windows, we do it for a purpose, because these bastards are the ones who are ripping us off. And certainly in my workplace, when I explained that the Black Bloc was targeting banks and tax evading shops, and it wasn't just general destruction of property, people were going, all right, yeah, that's all right then, fair dues. In fact, just after 26th of March, we pulled a bit of a stunt as an experiment in sort of like countering some of the stuff in media, where a group of brothers and sisters went out, masked up, in Black Bloc, and they found a couple of grot spots in town, and washed the windows of these empty buildings. And we got a little piece in local press, and it were all quite funny and quite absurd, but in effect, it turned everything around very, very, in a small way, and said, well, these anarchists are bothered about these buildings that are very old and very precious to this town, and they're trying to tidy them up. Small point, but I think maybe that's the way we should be thinking around getting the message across of what anarchism is in general.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think there might be a danger of over-politicising things like the Black Bloc and that sort of thing. Like, a lot of people are very cynical about having a certain message or agenda tacked on to something. They might have an instinctual sort of, oi! You know, sort of like something getting broken, but then get sort of a bit like, oh, they're just, you know, it's just another person trying to push this on me or that. And just let people kind of find things themselves.
Okay, and then did you want to say something about your football hooligans?
Yeah, I think that, like, all that I was going to say really is, I think that one thing which came out to me from that experience at Piccadilly was simply that I think that when you're, if you're trying to achieve an objective as the Black Bloc, if you're trying to get through police, and that serves as almost a metaphor of how the state is actually trying to prevent you from doing that, and that completely outlines kind of a power relationship and why you are fighting them. Mm. And then the other thing as well is that, obviously, as you were saying, all of these tactics do flow into each other. And I think that, I'm not sure where the quote originates from, but it's by moral force that we may, by physical force that we must. And I think that that should probably just be kind of the way that we should think about things.
Yeah, I just wanted to make another, reiterate the point about if they're not having a position on backward tactics. I personally do use them, but I think to have a position where you say that people should use them is oppressive, and some people aren't comfortable with it. And also, I'm not saying that you were saying this at all, but violent machoism is something that should be dismissed from the movement, and for very important reasons.
I think that you can see that there are various tactics and we can use, you know, some use this and some use that, but for example, if writing that sometimes is unuseful and it's actually doing damage to our movement, I think we should criticize it. For example, in my opinion, Black Bloc, I think it should be criticized because it's easy to be infiltrated by the cops and fascists and other things because you just view your hoodie and just join the Black Bloc. And second, you can't give damage to, for example, Starbucks by breaking its windows. If you want to give damage to Starbucks, I mean, organize Starbucks workers and make them join a union. And by this way, you will give a more damage to Starbucks. And Starbucks will be more pissed off if you organize Starbucks workers than just breaking its windows. And if you just break its windows, it's the workers themselves who have to clean it. And they will get some extra pay, I guess, for over time. And that's it. I mean, and also, as we see, there are lots of young people, 15, 16-year-old young people without any future prospects. But what we should do is to organize them, you know, to make their anger, to give their anger an organized form so that they can attack more, you know, more positive, more usefully.
I think the idea that, you know, kids my age have got no prospects is a bit... Because, you know, we get education for free. We're like, you know, you work hard and you get your grades and stuff. And I know it's not anarchist, but we've still got a prospect. I'm still like trying.
Yeah, it's important we defend those gains. Well, you know, we've got free education and health service and things. You know, there are important things to recognise that have been fought for and won by our predecessors, and they are useful to us.
Yeah, just on the idea that, like, you know, smashing the windows is going to damage Starbucks. I mean, that was largely the reason, I think this was also the reason why they came down so hard on UK Uncut in London was because occupying a shop for hours is going to cause them far more damage than smashing a window. I think that's the tactic we have to take at the moment with the cuts. We need to make the cuts a more expensive option because it's the only way these people think. So really, I suppose we just need to do as much damage as we can, whether that's by, you know, occupying a shop or by smashing it up. I mean, you know, there are a couple of banks which were trashed on the day which couldn't open for like a week or so, and that's going to do them some damage. So I suppose that's how we need to think about it, in a sense, like, what can we do to hold them up as much as possible?
I find the terminology, like, we should organise them to be a little bit problematic. And obviously, you know, you can try and encourage them to organise themselves, but one of the things that Black Bloc tends to do is actually a lot of time, I mean, this could be seen as a bad thing, but a lot of the time it picks up kids or unemployed or people that do not have the same power to cause economic damage through those sort of means. And, you know, one of the things about anarchism is that people often want to feel more empowered, and if some people feel like the only way that they can really do that and be involved, especially people that have not been like in this movement long or even are not at all, that just sort of join in and see it as something where they feel like they can actually maybe not achieve something big, but they feel like they can put a hit on there to sort of put on the pile that they might not feel like they could do or didn't feel interested in standing by pickets, because a lot of people don't think in class terms, you know, especially younger people. So yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess on that point, sort of in a way to move it on a bit, it's people not thinking in class terms is an interesting thing, because often, and I found this was what was really disempowering about Trotskyist and Leninist groups, was that, you know, they talk about everything in class terms and use this sort of archaic terminology of, you know, proletariat and agitating and all of this kind of stuff that, you know, we use a shorthand sometimes amongst ourselves, which is really, like, alienating for normal people, for everyday people who are not involved in organisations and that. And it's always a good thing to, like, check yourself if you find yourself using, like, you know, buzzwords that only we use. And I just thought that's just an interesting point. Yeah. You know, buzzwords and types of things that are, like, really weird. And...
Yeah. I've got to agree quite strongly with that. From my experience, I've got involved in, like, the student protests and that, and that. Because recently there have been a lot of people who haven't been politicised, who haven't been interested in politics and don't have a massive understanding of all the technology and things. In whole bits, the student stuff was mostly done by like socialist Trotskyist groups. So we were out there and they were throwing around lots of terms like that, and the sheer number of people who just kind of went, oh, this sounds interesting, and then they got like a load of very specific terminology and it just scared the crap out of some people, but who you could then actually later talk to and just go, oh, well, what they meant by that, and kind of try and put it in a way that didn't sound quite so harsh.
Yeah.
A lot of people actually went, oh, well, that does make sense, yeah, no, that's better. And with the class thing, a lot of people have different understandings. Like, we had a lot of people going, but I'm middle class, when the left-wing groups were just talking about anybody who wasn't a boss being a worker. And yeah, there are all these very different understandings of the same words, and it just mixed a lot of people up, put a lot of people off, and I think we can just use normal language and
yeah,
it connects a lot better with people.
Just on the class thing, one thing to watch out if you start defining working class in terms of people who are employed. Most of those bankers were employed. Mm. Corporations are structured where you can get away with whatever you want if you're employed by them, because you don't have responsibility anymore.
Okay, we've got a few minutes left. Are there any final points that we want to make, and then I'll ask the two main speakers to come. Yeah.
Just comment on doing labour organising. The classical issue of the labour organising was you went into the factory and you signed everyone up, but like, and you know, and people want to make their working conditions better because they worked there all their life. So if you won something, you had it. But like, if you, lots of people have like temp jobs, no jobs, they've got to move around. These days, you practically have temporary housing. And how is it that labor organizing or working on improving the issues of working class people adapts to the sort of situation where people are precariously employed? I mean, mainly if someone says, oh, you know, if you have a temp job, someone says, oh, that's crap, you just quit. Why would you stay in a crap job and so you could organize it? It's just like, you know, you're better to just leave. And so that's a situation which so many people are in. It's very hard to do sort of classical union organizing.
Yeah, and I think that's where things like MASH or a sort of equivalent or something running the community can help, is because people can be involved in that way wherever they are. If they're in insecure working conditions, they can fight from within something like MASH, and they can also fight their landlords, and the mutual aid can go beyond those boundaries of a workplace or particularly the profession or particularly union or something.
Yeah, Nancy, wobbly's yeah, to get in.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, that's when the IWW says, you know, one big union. We're in one big union. It doesn't matter whether you're temp, whether you're... Because, you know, capitalism at the moment in the modern day is quite a clever beast. It gives you the illusion of choice all the time. You can choose which, you know, iPhone or whatever it is that you're going to have, but it doesn't really make any difference, do you know what I mean? And it all comes from the same place. And same with your jobs. You know, oh, well, this one's crap, I'll get another one. And you have a belief that throughout your life you've got some choice, some control over actually your working conditions. You don't. So the way we beat that is we say, wherever you work, or when even if you're not working, if you're a pensioner, if you're unemployed, if you're a student, you're a cleaner, it doesn't matter. You're always going to be in this union, and we're always going to look out for you, whatever happens. And it's like, you know, that's why I've come round to it as a way of organising, because before that I could never see, you know, we spend too much time separating ourselves as working people or non-working people, electricians or teachers, do you know what I mean? So I feel there's a space for all of us to come together and say, we've all got very simple common interests, and it's a good way for the unemployed stuff at the moment, especially benefit claimants, because I can be saying to employed members, well, if we don't protect employment benefits, then that will drive down wages. You know, for you, you know, if we don't protect pensions and public sector workers, then the private sector decreases in quality. You know, they're all interconnected issues. It's great to be able to discuss with a variety of people from different backgrounds, regardless of where they are. So, you know, obviously that's what I would propose. You know, for you know, because classic labour organising, you can't just go in and sign everyone up. That's just not going to happen any longer. That's why union membership is down from 11 million to like 4.5 million.
Okay, just Tom, if you can just sum us up, just because we have to be out of this room, sadly.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just come back on that point, and then I guess I'll be around this office, sort of, if you want to chat about anything. Or, yeah, I mean, sort of to bridge from the wobbly stuff, I mean, there's been some interesting stuff going on with the Starbucks Workers Union and the Jimmy John's Workers Union in the United States, which are fairly casualised industries, fast food, working in fast food stores, and that kind of thing. And they've had some quite successes on a semi-traditional model in terms of they do build up job branches, but also it's not anyone who wants to organise, even if they're only there for a couple of weeks, they don't even have, you know, they will organise with non-members as well. So it's not just a traditional union model of signing everyone up and getting the dues in. So there's some quite interesting stuff right now. I think there's some probably stuff on the web about it. But in terms of what Solfed has been up to, I mean, it's kind of not. It's inspired by some of that kind of stuff, but. We pretty much start. Our strategy is based on starting where we are, which is usually as an individual. You know, it'd be great if we had two or three of us in the workplace, and we could, you know, you can have an actual branch in the workplace. But the reality is, most of the time we're an individual. But the way we try and organise is based on that. So even if you end up being there for ages, then the stuff you do will build up, and maybe you can get somewhere. But even if it's a short term thing, you can organise around a particular issue that, you know, you're working somewhere in the winter and there's a drafty door and you want the boss to fix it. That's something you can agitate around, you can get people angry, you can get people together to meet up for a coffee at lunchtime and discuss it, and you can take action on it. And it may well be that 6 months later all those people have moved on because of, you know, but they've got an experience of taking direct action. They know who to talk to if it happens again in their new workplace. So I think you can still organise. I just think that the models of traditional unionism are somewhat undermined, but not necessarily the power of workers. And I think it's a case of just thinking, how can we take that action? How can we get people to get in touch with us as well if they have those problems? And I think the best way of that is through doing and through building up that reputation for being able to win things. So.
Okay, thank you. Well, thanks everyone for coming. As I say, sadly we need to get out of this room now because other people need it.